Hey everyone, welcome back to Cart Overflow. Thanks for joining. Happy New Year. Today is January 5th, early January, and we have Christy Sumer, who is the founder and CEO of Incircled. Christy,
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you. You are locked down in Toronto. I'm in Texas, probably different ends of the spectrum, but nice to connect virtually.
Nice to meet you.
So yeah, but first, I'd love to hear your story. I was looking at your site. I think you're nearly 10 years in the business of fashion, and you've taken a very different tack than maybe what might be trending in terms of fast fashion and quick cycles. Can you just describe a little bit about Incircled and what your philosophy and mission is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I started Incircled way back in late 2012. I was formerly in my previous life, a management consultant who basically lived out of her suitcase. So in management consulting, you fly from client to client site and basically have a carry-on bag or else you're stuck in security forever. So the goal is to really optimize your time in and out of the airport as quickly as possible. So I got a little bit obsessed with packing light and trying to figure out how to be stylish, but comfortable, because some of those flights can be really long, especially if there are delays, but still look professional. And it kind of netted out into, you know, the idea of having more versatile, comfortable clothing, and really began with the idea of this one piece that we still have in our collection today called the Chrysalis Cardi, which is essentially an 8-in-1 versatile cardigan, scarf, tunic, dress type deal. And it was really inspired by that idea of like an infinity scarf that can be transformed into different looks. So you can wear it different ways and travel lighter and pack lighter. Over the years, it's changed a little bit. I would say we started off with that idea of traveling light and packing light, and then kind of evolved. I would say around 2016, we started to realize that a lot of our customers were coming to us for just everyday wear. They weren't really buying stuff for travel. They were buying it just to wear at home. So we really shifted our mission to focusing on the idea of creating like really well-made, sustainable basics that people can wear time and time that are trendless, and really focus on quality over quantity, and added that to our mission. And that really became quite foundational to who we are today, which is a certified B Corp. We're 100% made in Toronto, Canada, using all sustainable fabrics. And we really designed with that idea of like, how can we add value to our customers' closets one piece at a time? So we don't launch thousands of pieces a day like Shein does. We launch one a month, maybe, if that. And our goal is to really keep our collection intact as much as possible. So like one of our best sellers has been in our collection for almost 7 years, which is very unusual in fashion. As we know, it cycles quite a bit, but we're really going for that idea of longevity and timelessness and trendlessness.
Right, which dovetails nicely with sustainability, which I think is becoming more and more of a part of like the underlying foundation of brands. And just to clarify for those that haven't seen the brand, it's women's
yes,
clothes.
All women's wear, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I'd be curious to know like how you're defining, like in your mind, as you're like kind of like from a marketing perspective, or especially from a product perspective, if you're working on sizing and fabrics, price points, how you're defining your ideal customer or your different customer personas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually recently did some customer research. Well, we've done some customer research somewhat recently in 2018 or 2019. We did like a big quantitative survey because we wanted to understand our customers better. And we did some qualitative research at that time. And then most recently, we did some user research and interviews because we wanted to see how things have changed, because now we're 2 years into the pandemic and people's habits on shopping and working and living and traveling have shifted quite a bit, as well as their values is one thing that we've noticed has changed quite dramatically as well. Previously, when we first started, our designs were really, you know, quite unique, like very show-stopping. Like that was why people were coming to the brand. The fact that it was sustainable and ethically made was kind of like, oh, okay, cool, bonus. But what we've seen, as you kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, is that there's a huge mega trend shift to sustainability in general, sustainability in fashion, ethics, and understanding where your clothing are made, and really looking for like our customers really want to mirror their values in a brand. That's something we realize, is that, you know, sustainability and ethics are like not only just important, but they're very important to the majority of our customers and non-customers that we tend to attract. So that's something that is really key in our customer personas. I would say in terms of like overall, our customers tend to be super intelligent. They over-index in master's degrees and postdoctorate degrees. We have a lot of doctors and lawyers and entrepreneurs who purchase products from us, creatives, a lot of moms, and definitely the idea that they want to contribute to a better world. And they really value what we do, which is like really creating comfortable, well-made, well-fitted clothing that people can wear over and over again. They're not reading like Vogue magazine. They're probably not reading even InStyle magazine. Like, these are very practical, go-getting women that are too busy to worry about what to wear in the morning. And they just kind of want that put together for them. So we're really happy to do that for them as well.
Yeah. And one thing that I think is interesting is your clothes are, I mean, my terminology in regards to fashion is very limited, but like understated in the sense that there's not a strong brand. Like I didn't see any branding on it. Mm-hmm. So we wouldn't necessarily know that it is an Encircled kit or anything. However, maybe like one brand that is very big on sustainability and ethics is Patagonia, and every jacket, you know, you'd see the little logo here with a mm-hmm. mountaintop silhouette. So I'm wondering how you're incorporating brand in terms of like the actual product, and like, are you able to tie in any word mm-hmm. of mouth or ways to kind of like get customers to be your ambassadors in that regard? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So our customers are really stealth refers of customers. So again, they're not the type of people who are on Instagram posting selfies and like tagging all the brands they're wearing. Like, they're just not like that, but they will talk about us. We do know that. And we do have a customer referral program where they can give $20 and get $20 off their order, which they love. We're recently kind of looking at that to see what else we can do with that. But we're very lucky that they talk about us a lot, and we've got really great customer reviews. You know, our average review rate, I think, is like 4.8 out of 5 or something like that. And it's been like that for forever. And our customer satisfaction with our actual customer love team, which is like our customer service team, generally hovers around 5, which is pretty difficult in the industry and e-commerce. There's a lot of things that can go wrong in shipping products and all that kind of stuff. But that's something we really pride ourselves is on quality interactions. And we kind of receive that back from our customers, I would say, for the most part. From a branding perspective, I totally agree. We do have some products where we have some subtle branding on it, but we've definitely heard from our customers that they kind of appreciate the fact that you don't have our brand all over it. From a consumer marketing perspective, would I say that's the best thing? No, I think it would be better to have some sort of like logo at some point on there. And we've seen like, you know, there's a brand in the market that I'm familiar with that, you know, is very minimalist as well. And they've tried to incorporate like subtle ways of branding. It's just really difficult when you're building a minimalist brand because you don't want it to ruin the aesthetic of the product. And oftentimes those tags really do, or they become the actual brand, which we're not about, like graphics and stuff like that. So it's a little bit of a challenge, but we actually hired a branding agency in December who's starting soon. And we are working on a visual identity rebrand. So part of that might be looking at opportunities where we can incorporate it more into the actual apparel so that people can say, oh, that's like an Encircled t-shirt.
Got it. Cool. 4.5 to 5, super impressive for customer ratings. Can you just walk me through like tactically, maybe like how that process works post-purchase? Does it go to everybody, or are you doing some vetting in terms of maybe like NPS or engagement or AOV to validate who you can ask a review from?
Yeah. So there's two different ways we get reviews. So the first way would be through our customer love system that we use. It's called Gorgeous. And so it does automatic review requests when somebody closes an inquiry with anybody. And that is not vetted. So that goes to everybody who reaches out to us to talk to us, whether it's a return, exchange, an issue, a positive comment. So generally there we sit somewhere between 4.8 to 5. On average. So even when people don't like our answers, because like you have to have policies in place for returns. Like, you know, if somebody asks to return something from 2 years ago, like that's way outside our policy. We can't take it back. But we try to find like a happy medium. We try to treat everybody with, you know, very thoughtfully and kind. And that generates, I think, a lot of goodwill with our customers there. And we have a very good customer retention rate, I would say. Our repeat customer rate is very high, as is our lifetime value, which speaks to that. So, and then we also have reviews of like products. So product reviews are sent out automatically. We use an app called Judge Me. So those are sent out, I think, 2 weeks after shipping the product. And we read each and every one of those. So they're not always great. And sometimes they're bad, but like we really look at them because we want our assortment and our product offering to be as meaningful as possible. So if we launch a product and it misses the mark, you know, we're probably not going to continue making that product because it's not meeting the quality standards of our customers. Whereas when you have products that are doing really, really well, we actually look at those and say, hey, can we do better? Like, and so that's like the evolution of the product that we've had for 7 years, or even the Chrysalis Cardi that we started with. Like, we're always trying to find ways to improve it. So even when we are like a 4.8, we're like, could we be a 4.9? What could we do to get there? So we're always using that model of continuous improvement in ratings and reviews as well.
Yeah, I forget who released it, but I just saw a recent study about reviews and that customers have a natural skepticism of brands that have like 5.0 across the boards. And so I was looking at some of yours and yeah, not everything is five. And I think like, But it's a great product or good feedback. And so there's like the balance of candor with like a conversion rate optimization tool of a good product.
Yeah, I'm always shocked in the industry because we have a few competitors who won't publish reviews under a certain star rating. And you just know, because you know that not everybody likes a product. Like I even know that. We always publish them, even if they are, the only time we delete a review is if it's completely inaccurate. Like if somebody's like, you didn't ship my package or something, and it's like completely irrelevant to the product, we might delete it. But usually we'll publish everything and we respond to everything too. So if somebody has a really negative review, sometimes people, as you know, don't tell you in customer service that there's an issue. They'll tell you on the websites. So then we want to make sure we go back and close that loop and see if there's anything we can do to fix it if there's an issue. But if it's a product related issue, absolutely, I want to see it. And I think it's important for people to know, because not every product's going to work for every body type too. So like, you know, maybe if somebody's a bit curvier, this product would be a better fit for them, or maybe they should size up in this specific size or size down, like based on their shape. So those are things I think are important to call out. And some of those only come through negative reviews. So that can also help people sub-select and find the right product for them.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned earlier in terms of customer research, qualitative, quantitative. Can you walk me through that process? Of how you actually quantify the feedback and then how that data that you gathered informed what your future plans and strategies would be.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I have to go way back because this is way back. So I come from a background previous to management consulting. I was in consumer packaged goods. I worked at a company called Colgate Palmolive, and they loved qualitative and quantitative research. Like they loved it. They didn't do anything without it. So I tried to embrace that as much as possible. And I actually ended up hiring somebody I used to work with there who was freelancing at the time to help me with this and really walk through, because we wanted to understand why people were shopping with us and what were the main motivators for purchasing with us. And like I'd mentioned before, you know, the sustainable and ethics were on the list, but they actually at the time in 2018 or 2019, whatever this was, they were not at the top. Now, when we redid that research, not exactly apples to apples research, but they were at the top. So there's definitely been a huge shift in preference, and that genuine sustainability and ethics is really important. We notice now to a consumer, because there's a lot of greenwashing happening because it is such a trend. It's an actual trending term on Google. So of course, like big brands are trying to get in on it and get a share of that traffic by doing whatever little bit that they can to contribute. So for us, it just means like we have to look at when we're working with this branding agency, like what are those key things that we need to make sure are really present on our website and that tell a story that is, you know, emotionally connective to our customer, but also realistic and shares, you know, all that transparency that they want to see. So really it's about taking those elements from the research and figuring out how you can integrate that into your value proposition. And with brands like ours and in this space, they're usually not a simple value proposition because there's a little bit of complexity to the business. So we're trying to figure out the way to simplify that as much as possible. And some of the qualitative feedback we got recently really helped us with that, because carving out a unique space in the clothing industry, which is like arguably one of the most competitive categories in the world, is really hard. So we've learned some interesting things about our specific customer. And I think we can really niche down to that and a really dynamic online experience to match what their expectations are as well. So I don't know if that helps a little bit with clarity, but really we were trying to test some concepts and see how they kind of resonated and then use that as input into our branding work and our website redesign.
Yeah, I think that definitely comes through. Granted, I think in my mind, a B Corp stands for a lot of those values anyway, but it definitely screams loud and clear from the homepage of slow fashion. Slow fashion, I think, is a term like sustainability, made in Toronto, and kind of the antithesis of just like buying cheap things, you know, every month or so. So I guess I can see the end part of that reason. And I think also what's really interesting is that you have a quiz to to help maybe keep some of that data updated on an ongoing basis. Mm-hmm. And then also to siphon them off to the appropriate persona or mm-hmm. collection of stuff. But I'd love to hear what you do, like what your strategy is with the quiz, and then maybe how it infiltrates different parts of the customer experience, whether it's email, SMS, the on-site experience or conversion rate stuff.
Yeah, that's such a good question. So we developed a quiz back in, so I've always been a big fan of like leading with value when it comes to email opt-in incentives. And for those of people that don't know what that is, it's basically giving somebody something to opt into your list, which most commonly in e-commerce is free shipping or 10% off or something like that. It's usually a price or promotion. And, you know, a business school coach that I took a program from a long time ago, Marie Forleo, she was a huge proponent of value-based offers. She worked primarily in service-based area, but I was like, this can definitely apply for e-commerce, especially when you're trying to teach somebody something. So at the beginning, we were trying to teach people how to travel light. So we developed this printable PDF packing list that people could get, and it actually ended up going viral on Pinterest. So we got like just thousands and thousands of email subscribers through that alone. And then we evolved it when we changed our brand, as I mentioned, to this like minimalist wardrobe workbook, which was like this 20-page printable workbook that people could basically use to like effectively Marie Kondo their closet and, you know, streamline their wardrobe. And it was really well made. We put so much effort into the graphic design. And again, that went viral on Pinterest. So we're like, wow, we've got something really good here. We're really good at email incentives. We should try something new because it'd been out for a while. So we're like, what can we do? What would be really fun and interesting? And I think it was around like 2017 or 2018, we developed the quiz because I wanted to start to see if there was, you know, it was kind of my test project for something that I think we're probably finally going to implement this year, but really getting into the heads of our customers and understanding what do they need in their closet based on what their lifestyle is, which was kind of the beginning of the minimalist wardrobe workbook. It was really that idea that like when you're shopping, you should really be shopping with intention and purpose. And like, what do you actually need, but not just what you need based on like what, you know, Elle magazine says you need, but what's in your closet today? What's your lifestyle? What do you wear most? And like start to integrate some of those questions to walk people down that path of what products might ultimately be best for them and they would love the most in their closet and wear the most. Because we know that when customers buy our products and then they wear them a lot, they become huge advocates for the brand. So this quiz we developed, it's on a platform called Typeform, which is not the best one for quizzes. It is very hard-coded and there's a lot of intricate details to getting that thing properly running. But yeah, we use it as like a data filter. So definitely it shares data. It's very fun. Like you go through it, it's very lighthearted. It's like find your ideal capsule wardrobe type in 5 minutes. But there is some interesting data points in there because we can see what people are gravitating towards when they pick those answers. And we get quite a few quiz opt-ins. I mean, we've had it since 2017 or 2018. We revised it during the pandemic because some of the questions were no longer relevant, going to work and stuff like that. But we've gotten like probably tens of thousands of opt-ins. So we have lots of data through that. And then through that quiz, it essentially funnels people into, I think there's one of three archetypes. You know, there's like the boardroom boss or the queen of comfort, or I think it's like the chameleon. I can't remember the third one off the top of my head. And we have collections developed around all of these. So it'll push them not only to a collection page, but also a printable PDF with like outfit ideas. And then yes, there is like a welcome flow tied to that, which is customized based on the type they pick in the quiz. So it's very integrated from end to end. And our customer really likes that idea of like sub-selecting through a collection, even though we don't have that many products compared to like a Shein or something like that, or H&M. They love that idea of that curation of products just for them.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm running a quiz platform. And I think it's a really good one because yeah, it is fun. It's simple. There's a collection at the end, but what about the delta or the difference between somebody who takes a quiz and somebody who doesn't in regards to opt-in rate, in regards to conversion rate, average order value? Because my hope, and I might be leading you towards like what I've seen, maybe like, and the better outcomes of those who use a quiz effectively is that there is a better opt-in rate, especially if there is a good exchange of value for, you know, here, I'll give you the data, I'll give you my contact info, and in return, I get a personalized recommendation. And then also it simplifies the buying process, and that's not even touching some of like the email revenue. which generally might contribute to 20 to 30% of overall revenue. But yeah, I'd love to hear if you've seen any results of those who take the quiz versus those who don't, and if it makes sense to drive them to the quiz.
Mm. Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't know if we've ever cut the data like that. I think we can for sure. The one thing I do know is that we have run tests around cross comparing the quiz to like a more traditional e-commerce offer, whether it's free shipping on your first purchase or 10% off or 20% off. And actually the quiz outperforms every time on conversion rate, which is so interesting because it's not really instant gratification. It's not a value in terms of a monetary thing, but we know from tracking the pop-up performance that it does outperform it by quite a bit, actually. The last time we tested it versus 10% off, the conversion rate on actually completing the quiz versus like submitting their email for the opt-in was like almost double. Oh, wow. So it does make a big difference. I would say we don't cut it by like data, but I know that like when we've also tested in the welcome series, you know, the quiz versus the 10%, it's always outperformed with the quiz, even if there's no discount in that follow-up email. Again, it comes back, and I would assume, and I can verify this for sure, but I would assume the average order value is higher because there is more of a collection and kind of curated experience that they're delivered in terms of like outfit ideas and what goes with what, which is we know is like a key pain point of our customers as well. So there's definitely been nothing really like negative about it. You do typically see a bit of drop off, like when you ask people more personal questions. And I think that's something we've modified over the years. Like we tried to do like birthday gifts at one point. So like you ask somebody's like date of birth and then people drop off. So we took that out, you know, and SMS, same thing, like we'll put in a phone number, people drop off. So like we try and like play with it a little bit to see if we can maximize that opt-in rate, but overall we've been really happy with it.
Yeah. And Heidi, Zach, founder of Third Love, they've been very transparent with their quiz data. And so the quiz is kind of like at the center point of the Third Love, the lingerie brand, and over collecting millions of quiz responses or quiz takers, and I think like 16 million quiz data points, there is a ton that they're getting in terms of customer feedback and identifying opportunities where there are gaps in the market or where customers are dissatisfied with the current options of what they can buy. And hence, you know, they released the half size, which wasn't really anything before, but the quiz kind of unearthed that as an opportunity and a gap. Mm-hmm. So that's, there's a lot when you're talking about like the beginning of this conversation, quantified customer feedback, that's a great way to gather it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's super impressive. I mean, our questions are definitely, I've taken the Third Love quiz before because I was curious and I love quizzes too. And ours is less factual. It's more fun. Yeah. I would say for sure. It's not going to be like, yeah, it's it. But we do test product ideas. So we will put like, if we have a couple of product ideas we're playing around with, we'll put them at the end of the quiz and ask, we have a question around like what's missing in your closet. And we've used that to direct product offering. So if everybody's picking like a really comfortable blazer, for example, at one point that was the answer. We made one in 2019 based off of that information. It's done really well. So it can be definitely a great source of research as well.
Very cool. So you mentioned that you had a really great repurchase rate, high customer value. Curious about benchmarks and how that's actually measured. At what point you're measuring like a repurchase? Is something to consider a repurchase? Mm-hmm. And then also what that post-purchase experience looks like that actually drives customers to keep you top of mind, understand like maybe the 8 different ways that they can wear the product and then ultimately purchase mm-hmm. again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So repurchase rate, we'd usually measure it on like the predicted date of repurchase on average, you know, which is usually with us, I think about 100 days or something like that. So once a quarter on average. We do have customers who purchase once a month or more than that, but we don't actually launch that many products. So, you know, I think it's pretty normal to have that kind of repurchase rate. And customer lifetime value, you know, for us is just a simple calculation using like our AOV and our repeat rate as an estimate, but we've done more complex calculations and it's actually pretty similar to that. So like, I'm not always a fan of like complexity when it comes to that, because I think you can get a pretty good guess off of that rate. But yeah, I would say like we're very blessed to have a higher average order value. We do have a higher average retail price because of how our products are made and where they're made. So there's definitely a higher retail average, and people typically spend, they're usually buying about 2.2 pieces per order or something like that, 2.2 to 2.5. And our average order value sits around 245 or something like that, Canadian typically. So in terms of like post-purchase flows, we have a lot of email confirmations that are like connected to Shopify that have been customized. And in those, we encourage people to sign up for our email list. We encourage them to follow us on Instagram and tag us. And then we have some stuff that goes into the actual box when we're shipping the product, encouraging people, you know, teaching them how to care for their garment, because that's like a big thing with sustainable fabrics, is that people are used to throwing synthetics into the dryer and, you know, just roughen them up, and natural fabrics need a little bit more care. So we have that kind of education piece, and that has like some information to follow us. So we're always trying to connect customers with us through multiple touch points, whether it's inviting them to our Facebook group, which is a private community for over 1200 women to buy, sell, and trade in circles and talk about new product launches and stuff like that. We really try to create that circular interaction with our customers, because we want people to wear the closet. If they buy pieces from us, we want them to have the most information on how to style them and wear them. And if they change, if their body type changes, whether they had a baby or something else happened, maybe they can sell it to somebody else and then have a new life and buy another piece from us. So we really do our best to try and keep in contact. We do a lot of retargeting, like some of those more traditional things like Facebook retargeting and stuff like that. But we do find a good portion of our sales is coming from, you know, the traditional channels like email, Facebook marketing, you know, Instagram, organic and stuff like that. So, but our customers very much still on Facebook, which is a little bit different than some brands for sure, because they tend to be over 30. So they're, you know, mid 30s and up. So they're still hanging out on Facebook for sure. They're not necessarily on Snapchat or TikTok and stuff like that. So though we explore new channels and whatnot all the time. So yeah, so we try to really like integrate, and we do a lot of content marketing to keep that customer loyalty going. Like as an example, tonight we have a workshop with a stylist in Toronto virtually, who's going to teach, you know, 10 tips to elevate your style in 2022 for free to our audience. So we do stuff like that to really add extra value to being a customer of Encircle.
That's excellent. That's really cool. I don't know. A lot of companies have spent the last few weeks, end of 2021, doing a reflective look back at the year and then planning for the year, next 3 years, whatever. I'd love to hear maybe like what you can share strategically of how you see the brand growing. And what your goals are, and maybe how it's changed, because 2021 had some significant challenges for e-commerce brands when we talk about third-party cookies or iOS changes or shipping. I mean, there was a plethora of challenges. Mm-hmm. How that might impact your strategy and what you would define a successful year by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's been a roller coaster, and I think a lot of people who aren't in e-commerce don't see the behind the scenes of it, but like 2020 for a lot of brands was like a really great year. In fact, it was our best year ever of revenue and profit. And then 2021 was a garbage fire. So it's like not necessarily in terms of revenue, but in terms of profit, and all our costs went up, and supply chain issues and late deliveries, missing product, like shutdowns, like all kinds of stuff, HR, you know, iOS 14, yeah. Everything just seemed to hit at once. Organic Instagram reach went down by 70% in, I think it was March of last year, or yeah, 2021. Like, so just like the bottom falling out of everybody's business. I laugh because it's like so ridiculous that all of this happened at the same time after all of us were like, oh, phew, thank God 2020 is over. Like, yeah. Yikes. So it's actually taught me a lot about, you know, how to run a business. And I think there's a lot of pressure in the industry to grow as fast as possible. And I for sure succumbed to that pressure last year, you know, add more team members, you know, add more inventory, do this, do that. And we've always been like really lean, and we've always been really lean, not just in terms of inventory, but people, and very smart and scrappy. And we really got away from that in 2021, which is not who we are as a brand. And that's kind of where we went awry. I think we started to get into categories that we honestly didn't belong in. We started hiring way too fast and too many people. So we've really had to cut back and reevaluate what the business looks like. And because all of that impacts everybody on the team, but it also impacts me personally in terms of my quality of life and mental health and stuff like that as a founder. So we've made some pretty big shifts, I would say, in the last couple of months to totally reorient our team, look at our model of working and outsourcing a lot of stuff that, you know, previously we would probably would have hired somebody full-time for. You know, we're about to move our inventory to a third-party logistics warehouse, just because like fulfilling inventory and continuing to grow a warehouse as we grow is just so much work. So we're really trying to work smarter, not harder, and focus on the channels that really drive a lot of our business. I'm pretty bullish on Facebook ads, I'll be honest. I think they're going to figure it out somehow. I really think that they're going to build, because they have to, because I think they've lost so much revenue that they're going to have to figure a way to model data so that people can get better transparency for results. So I'm actually pretty, I'm thinking that's going to kind of correct itself in 2021, but it doesn't, that said, I don't think you should always be reliant on single channels. So for us, it's really getting back to our roots in what we do well, which is content marketing. So really educating the consumer. And one of the things I've realized over the last couple of years too, strategically, is that, you know, we've seen a lot of slow fashion brands start because a lot of people have been working from home and they started side hustles, they started a Shopify store or whatever, which I think is great, but then it's more competition for your product. And I realized, I think I, for a long time, I thought, okay, you just make the best product ever and you can make a better product for sure. But like telling that story online that that t-shirt is so much better than this shirt because of this, 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 it's just like really difficult to tell. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's really now about going forward, differentiating through experience. So how can we create, like anybody, my mom could create a Shopify store if she wanted to tomorrow, you know, it's really easy. So how can we create a unique experience online? So this year is going to be all about investing in our online experience and how we can create, you know, that integration of what you saw with the quiz. Like, how can we take that shopping ability and actually roll it out on our site and make it so that people can come to our site and say, hey, like, this is where I'm at with my wardrobe. I want to streamline my wardrobe, but I want, you know, I'm a size, whatever, extra large in tops and bottoms. And I work from home and this, and then get, you know, like an output of what exactly would fit for them in their life and what size that would be. So we're really trying to build in some of that artificial intelligence into our website as we build it out in 2022, which will be a bit of an investment financially, but I think it will really pay off because that will bring a unique experience for anybody, even if they're shopping and just trying to figure out what they need in their closet in general. So we're really focusing on that and education and continuing to storytell and share behind the scenes as much as we can with our business and brand. And hopefully when the world reopens again up here, we'll get back into retail, because retail was actually, brick and mortar retail was actually a good channel for us. You know, we used to have a retail store in our studio, we used to do semi-permanent pop-ups and they drove a lot of revenue for us and a much higher average order value. So I'd like to get back to that world eventually when we can, because I think that would be a nice incremental channel to the online experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. One more reason to get to pre-pandemic norms.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Or 2020 from a business perspective.
Totally.
Yeah. Christy, thank you so much for sharing so much and being so generous with your insights and wealth of knowledge. So I really appreciate it. The best way to find you online?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can check me out personally. I'm at Christy Sumer on Instagram. I also have a podcast called Brave and Boss. You can find that at christysumer.com, and you can check out Encircled at encircled_ on Instagram and encircled.co online.
Awesome. Christy, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And that's the episode for today. Thanks so much for listening all the way to the end. We love you for it. If you found anything valuable at all or want to share your feedback, please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also just drop us a line, hello@cartoverflow.com. We'd love to hear your feedback or suggestions so we can cover it in a future episode. All right, see you next time.